Actually, the five elementary ingredients of creation, the interaction thereof set up by the eternal time, and the intuition or nature of the individual living beings are all differentiated parts and parcels of the personality of Godhead Vasudev. And in truth, the five elementary ingredients of creation, the interaction thereof, and the intuition or nature, of the living of the individual living beings, are all differentiated parts and parcels, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. And in truth, there is no other value in them. Purport by Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. This phenomenal world, is impersonally the representative of Vasudev, because the ingredients of its creation, their interaction, and the enjoyer, the resultant, the enjoyer of the resultant action, the living being, are all produced by the external and internal energies of Lord Krishna. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 7.4.5. The ingredients, namely earth, water, fire, air, sky, as well as the conception of material identity, intelligence and the mind, are all produced of the external energy of the Lord. The living entity who enjoys the interaction of the above gross and subtle ingredients as set up by the eternal time is the offshoot of internal potency, with freedom either to remain in the material world or in the spiritual world. In the material world, the living entity is enticed by deluding nations. But in the spiritual world, he is in the normal condition of spiritual existence without any delusion. The living entity is known as the marginal potency of the Lord. But in all circumstances, neither the material ingredients nor the spiritual parts and parcels are independent from the personality of Godhead Vasudev, because all things, either products of the external, internal or marginal potencies of the Lord, are simply displays of the same effulgence of the Lord, just as light, heat and smoke are displays of fire. None of them are separate from the fire. All of them combine together to be called fire. Similarly, all phenomenal manifestations, as well as the effulgence of the body of Vasudev, are his impersonal features. Whereas he eternally exists in his transcendental form called Satchidananda Vigraha, distinct from all conceptions of the material ingredients mentioned above. So this chapter is titled as The Cause of All Causes, Sarva Karana Karanam. One of the definitions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is that he is the cause of all causes. Generally, in the material platform, we cannot understand that how a person can be the cause of all causes, especially this vast and variegated material nature. How can that be produced out of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, out of just one person? It is difficult to understand, but very scientifically it has been described in this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of all causes. And that has been done by first explaining what this material creation is, and then explaining how this material creation has become manifest from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Generally, the material nature is divided into five different elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And everything that we see in the material nature is actually a combination of these five elements. And then further, it has been defined that these five elements are actually a product of the finer, much finer ingredient of the creation called Mahatattva. And Mahatattva in different density, or you can say different frequency, gives rise to different kinds of elements. At certain frequency it is earth, in some other frequency it is water, in some other frequency it is fire, in some other frequency it is air, and in some other frequency it is ether. It's not that they are different elements, but they are actually a product of the same ingredient, but appears to be different due to our sense perception. At certain frequency it appears to be like earth, solid matter, and some other frequency it is water or liquid, and fiery, airy, and ethereal. And they are actually a product, and these elements in conjunction or their interaction with our senses give rise to different objects of the senses. Different sense, there are five elements in the material nature and there are five senses every human being has. Actually, human form is the most perfect form in the material nature. It's the most perfect form because this form is identical to the form of the Lord. And this form has been endowed with five senses. That's the highest we can see among all the living entities. Like, human beings are the only living entities that are endowed with five senses, and all these five senses are very very efficient. In human form, the senses are very acute, very efficient. In other forms, like, there are some living entities that have only one sense, like an earthworm. Earthworm has, or other worms, they don't have the eyes to see, they don't have the tongue to taste, and so on and so forth. All they have is skin. So all they can, their life, their whole consciousness is limited to only their skin. And they can only, first perception they have is touch. Then there are some living entities that have only mouth. All they know is to eat. That's about the only sense that they have, only perception they have. They can't see, they can't touch, etc., etc. They can't smell. So this way, then there are some entities that can only see, and they do not have the touch or smell. These are the very, very lower grade of existence. And then there are some animals that has two senses. Like, they can either see and touch, or touch and taste, things like that. But when one gets a human body, that body is actually most elevated, because this body has been endowed with all five senses. We can see, we can touch, we can hear, we can smell, and we can taste. So these five senses that we have, not only that we have five senses, there are other animals also have five senses, like tigers or different animals. Cows, goats, asses, donkeys, monkeys, They also have five senses. They also can see, they also can touch, they also can smell, etc. But their senses are not as developed as the human being. Like even with animals, sometimes they don't, although they have the senses, but their other senses are not very acute, very developed. Like a dog. It does, it, although it can see and taste, but the seeing and tasting, touching, they practically don't have any touch sensation. Very little. Because their body is covered with hair. So their touch senses is not so acute. And at least their touch sense is nothing compared to human beings. They have the touch. They have the skin, so with the skin they can perceive touch. But with dog, the smell is very, that one sense is very acute, very developed. That is the smelling ability. Like, that's why police use dogs for detecting crimes. Like they will make the dog sniff something that they have found from the criminal, and then the dog will go out and find the criminal. So this way dogs have the ability, their senses are, their smelling organ is very, very developed. But human being has the ability to develop all his senses. As it is, all his senses are quite developed, but they can even develop them further. And then it has been described that there are five elements and there are five senses. Now these five elements interact with the senses and they give rise to the sense object. Like this material nature is actually a creation of sense objects, right? And how this material nature become manifest, how this is a product of the objects of our senses, because these elements, the five elements, interact with our senses. Like ether interacts with our ears and sound is produced. Sound is actually a combination of ether and our ears. So if there is only ether and no ear, then there won't be any sound. And if there is only ears and no ether, then there won't be any sound. Only when these two things come together, then there is sound. There is fire and we have our eyes. So the combination of these two produces what? Form. There is air and we have our skin. And combination of these two produces what? Touch. There is water and we have our tongue. And the combination produces what? Taste. And there is earth and we have our nose. And combination is smell. So this way, due to the combination of earth, water, fire, air, ether, with the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and touch gives rise to five objects of the senses like sound, touch, form, taste, and smell. So this is how the material nature becomes manifest. Like we can see that how this material nature is a product of our senses, because we can consider if a man doesn't have the eyes to see, there are so many people those are blind. How will they experience this nature? Can you imagine? A person who is born blind, how will he experience this nature? He won't be seeing all these tall buildings and paintings and the church spire and so forth. He won't see anything. I mean, you can close your eyes and you try to experience this world, what the world will be like. It will be very devoid. It will be very much limited than, much more limited than a person with eyes, the way he experiences the nature, right? And the same way, if a person is deaf, if he can't hear, then he won't hear the sound. He wouldn't know that there is something called sound. Right? If somebody doesn't have the nose or the ability to smell, he won't get to know about the smell. So this way, if somebody doesn't have a tongue, he would know the taste of the food. So without, we can see that it is our senses through which we experience this nature. Now if we don't have any sense, if we don't have eyes, if we don't have ears, if we don't have tongue, if we don't have skin, and if we don't have the nose, then what will be the experience of this material nature? Will we experience anything? No. We won't, I mean, theoretically we won't be able to experience anything. There won't be any experience. Like for instance when you're sleeping. When you're sleeping, then all your senses are withdrawn. All your senses are inactive. Then what do you experience? Do you see this world? Does anybody see this world when he's sleeping? He neither sees, neither he smells, nor he touches, nor he tastes, right? And nor he hears. So that is the state of inactivity of the senses. And when the senses become inactive, then the world also becomes inactive. So this point I was making to clarify one point, that actually this material nature is a creation of our consciousness. It is not that because the material nature is there, that's why we are here. But actually because we are here, that's why the material nature. Is it clear? Like, if we are not here, will the nature be existing for me, us? Say, for instance, if Mathura Mohan is not here, will there be material nature for me, Mathura Mohan? No? Will you experience material?
I will not experience.
Right.
Maybe.
So, same way, if you are not here, then will there be material nature for you?
No.
So if nobody is here, will the material nature be existing? No. So that's why Krishna explains this point in Bhagavad Gita. He first explains the material nature, that how it is composed of 8 different elements. And what are those 8 different elements? Who is there? Can you tell me? Do you know the 8 different elements of material nature?
Yes, earth, water, fire, ether,
air,
land, intelligence, possible.
Very good. So this material nature is composed of these 8 elements. And what shloka is that in Bhagavad Gita that describes that? Very good. That is 7.4.4. I'm sorry, 7th chapter, text 4. And then what is the next shloka? Very good. Yeah. So, aparayam itastannam. Krishna is telling that this material nature is actually inferior. The material nature that has been created by these 8 elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego, they are actually inferior. This material nature is an inferior energy of mind. Separated energy of mind, Krishna is telling. But then he is telling that beyond this inferior separated energy, there is a superior energy. Aparayam itastannam prakritim vidhi me param. There is a nature that is para or superior. And jiva bhutam mahabhapu jajidam dharjate jagat. And the living entities are coming from that superior energy. And then what?
They cycle the material.
No, they sustain the material.
Yes.
Because the living entities are there, that's why the material energy is here. Right? Material nature is manifest. Jayedam dharjate jagat. Jagat means this material nature. Right? And dharjate, dharan means to sustain. So the living entity is actually sustaining this material nature. So now we can understand what is actually annihilation, how Krishna destroys. Do you know how Krishna destroys the material nature? Right. Not destroying. Living entities cannot be destroyed. Krishna simply withdraws the living entities. And when the living entities are withdrawn, then the whole material nature becomes unmanifest. So that's why the material nature is sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest. Right? When the material nature becomes manifest, when does the material nature become manifest?
The living entities manifest.
Yeah. How does it happen? How does the living entities manifest? What does Vishnu do?
He exhales.
He just looks at Maya. Right? And just as he looks at Maya, all the living entities are put into the womb of Maya. Right? And so then the material nature becomes manifest. And how Krishna destroys? Krishna simply withdraws his glands. Right? And then all the living entities come back to Krishna, Vishnu. So the whole material nature again dissolves. It's a very wonderful creation. Yeah? Biggest creator, the biggest scientist is Krishna. He does everything. He doesn't even have to do anything by his hands and feet. He simply looks, he simply withdraws his glance. And when he looks, then the whole material nature becomes manifest. When he withdraws his glance, then the material nature becomes dissolved. And then it is further, there is further stages also. Like, he breathes, and with each bubble produces a universe. Right? Like Krishna is lying, the Mahavishnu is lying on the causal ocean. Right? And when he lies in the causal, first he glances, then through the glance the material nature becomes manifest. Then he lies down on the causal ocean. And when he lies down on the causal ocean, then what happens? He breathes, right? And when he breathes, actually we breathe, how do we breathe? We breathe not only through our nose and mouth, we breathe also through the pores of the body. Right? And accordingly, and each time you breathe, like if you are breathing underwater, then what happens? You get the bubbles, right? So each bubble is actually an universe. There are some bubbles that are coming from the pores of the body, right? And some bubbles are coming from the nose and mouth. And so accordingly there are different sizes of the universe. Some universes are very tiny, some universes are very big. Some universes are controlled by four-headed Brahma, some universes are controlled by thousand-headed Brahma. Some universes are controlled even by million-headed Brahma. So we can well imagine how vast this is. And we are actually living in the smallest universe, which is controlled by a four-headed Brahma. So we can conceive how vast this material creation is. And so this is one aspect. Another aspect that has been described, which of course has been dealt with already very briefly. Krishna's energy has three different Krishna has three different types of energy. Krishna actually has innumerable potency, innumerable kinds of energy. Parashya Shakti Vividhaiva Shriyate. Krishna's energy are innumerable, vividha. But out of these innumerable potencies, there are three major potencies. Right? What are those three potencies?
Antaranga Shakti,
Bahiranga Shakti. Very good. And what is the function of the Antaranga Shakti?
Pleasure potency.
Is it only the pleasure potency? No. Antaranga Shakti has Sat, Chit and Ananda. Existence, knowledge and bliss. So pleasure potency is one of them. Most wonderful potency of all, most elevated of all the three energies, internal potency, is Ladini Shakti or pleasure giving potency. But there is Shandini and Shambhit also. Shandini is existence, Shambhit is knowledge, and Ladini is pleasure. So by these energies, by Krishna's Antaranga Shakti, internal potency, Krishna's abode or the spiritual sky becomes manifest. Spiritual sky is full of joy, full of enjoyment. Right? And that is the creation of Krishna's external energy. I'm sorry, internal energy. Krishna's internal energy produces the spiritual sky where everything is eternal, everything is full of knowledge, and everything is full of bliss. And then there is Krishna's external energy. What is Krishna's external energy? This material nature. And what is the function of this material nature? Internal energy gives pleasure. And what does the external energy give?
Pain.
So the purpose of Krishna's external energy is to just inflict pain. So everybody who is here is supposed to get pain. We are actually in a very, very painful state of existence. And then what is the other energy? Tatastha. Tatastha is the... Why is it a living... Why is it called Tatastha?
Because they are so small and have to take shelter.
Tatastha is actually... Tatastha means the margin. Tat means a bank, right? Like the river bank. On this side of the bank, right, is the water, and on this side is land, right? The margin. On this side of the margin is plus, and this side of the margin is minus. You remember graph? There's the axis, zero, and on the right hand side of the axis is positive, and on the left hand side of the axis is negative. The same way, the marginal energy, the living entities, and this side, they're in the margin. And on the right hand side is spiritual sky, and on the left hand side, material nature. Right? And living entity has the ability either to remain in the spiritual nature or to fall down in the material nature. Now when a living entity goes to spiritual nature, what happens? He enjoys, because that's the world of enjoyment. And when a living entity comes to material nature, then what happens? He suffers. So should a living entity be in the material nature? Should a living entity be in the material nature? Does anybody want to be in the material nature? Only fools want. So that's why our business is to tell everyone, please come out of the material nature and get into the spiritual nature. Because if you come to spiritual nature, then you'll enjoy. We can ask, who is there who wants to suffer? Is there anybody who wants to suffer? Raise your hand. So we can see that no one actually wants to suffer. So if no one wants to suffer, then how should they get out of suffering? By getting out of this material nature. And when they are situated in spiritual nature, then automatically they enjoy. We do not have to go to the factory and work and make the money to enjoy. In the spiritual nature, you don't need money to enjoy. Right? In the spiritual nature, everything is supplied free. Like you do not have to get money to enjoy there. You simply have to desire and everything will be fulfilled. But all the desires there in the spiritual nature is tuned up to Krishna's desire. The living entities in the spiritual nature do not have any desire outside of Krishna. That's why we call our society as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We do not have any separate consciousness, but our consciousness is Krishna's consciousness. Whatever Krishna wants, we want that. And whatever Krishna doesn't want, we don't want that. So that is how we become situated in the spiritual nature, just by tuning up ourselves with Krishna. Like we notice, we see ourselves, that when, say, a child who is tuned up to his father's desire, he enjoys. Right? But if the child rejects the father, then he suffers. So that's how one has to learn how to be situated in real enjoyment by becoming Krishna conscious, or by being tuned up to Krishna's desire. If Krishna says, now you come and embrace me, so devotee does that. Since Krishna wanted, he just actually devotee always wants to embrace Krishna. So when a devotee embraces Krishna, he is plunged into an ocean of bliss. And even if Krishna tells some devotee, now you die, devotee says, okay, I'll die. Devotee doesn't say, well, Krishna, no, please don't let me die. I have so much work to do. I just put $1 million in the bank and I didn't even start to enjoy it as yet. All my life I worked hard and I made the money and now I wanted to go out and enjoy. And now you're asking me to die. Please don't let me die. No, devotees never feel like that. Devotees just, they are simply tuned up to Krishna's desire. If Krishna says, now you embrace me, devotees embrace Krishna and experience that supreme joy. And if Krishna tells devotees to get out, then devotees go out. And then also he enjoys, because that's Krishna's desire. So that's how one becomes tuned up to Krishna consciousness, or Krishna's consciousness, and experience the supreme joy. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question?
Yes, you explained very interestingly how the material nature sustained by the entities, and when Vishnu looks at the creation and it comes into being, but what is it actually which Vishnu looks at, since the creation comes into being after the living entities are there?
Vishnu looks at Maya, who is the shadow of Lakshmi, or Yoga Maya. Shadow, it's a... Maya also is existing. Maya has her existence. But then the subtle elemental form of Maya is Mahatattva. It transforms like Pradhan Mahatattva, right? And then from that produces Ahankar, Buddhi, Man, and Ether, Air, Fire, etc. Like it's a, we cannot, you know, we cannot really conceive because it's beyond our senses. Right? We cannot even conceive what our false ego is. Right? We do not know what the false ego is. We cannot conceive what the mind is or what intelligence is. Now this is even finer than that. Mahatattva is even finer than that, those elements. It is existing, it is there. But it's a substance. So Krishna looks at that substance and the material nature becomes manifest. And Maya is a person. But the Maya energy is this Mahatattva. And from Mahatattva the creation begins.
So this is the unmanifested creation, Mahatattva.
Well, I mean, to give a gross example, we can say that, you see, an artist, he takes clay. The clay is a substance. But the clay doesn't, clay, as a clay, it doesn't have a form. But then, with the clay, he makes a model. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that, you see. Like the substance is there, but from that substance, you know, further development of creation. I mean, it is very difficult. Actually, sometimes they compare Mahatattva with mind, because everything is produced out of mind. Right? But then again, it is further analyzed that Mahatattva is finer than mind, much finer than mind. It's not quite mind. Like, there are different expressions, chitta, man, chitta, right? And so chitta also is something like mind. But it is not quite like mind. Like, for instance, when you dream, right? The dream is coming from your mind, right? But as you are, when you are dreaming, then what you are dreaming appears to be real, right? When you dream, you do not think that you are dreaming. Mm-hmm. When you dream, you think that you are in reality. Right? So, the understanding is that it is very, very fine substance.
What is the difference between
Sanjay and Sanjay and Sanjay? Well, one is the energy and the other is the effect. The energy is Sandini, the effect is Sat or eternity. Right? Sambit is the energy and the effect of that energy is Chit or consciousness. And Ladini is the energy and the effect is ananda or enjoyment.
So isn't
Satchidananda
refers to the energy, how it is?
No, Satchidananda is actually the spiritual element. Right? The spiritual nature is Satchidananda. And when a living entity is situated in the spiritual nature, then also it is Satchidananda. Right? When the living entity is in the spiritual nature, then he is also Satchidananda. His form, the way here everything is made out of earth, water, fire, air and ether, there everything is made out of Satchidananda. Right? Everything in the spiritual sky is created by eternity, knowledge and bliss. Everything there is blissful. Because it's created, it's produced out of bliss, right? It is, it's like, yeah, I mean it's inconceivable, you cannot really understand how things can be produced out of ananda, right? And it's like that, you know, the devotee's body is made out of ananda. And from that ananda, the bhavas and all those excesses are here. Because the body is made of ananda, and the waves of ecstasy are, the waves, the same way, out of the ananda you get these waves of ecstasy. But when our body is made out of muscles and blood and bones, then obviously cannot experience ananda. Then it experiences misery. So Brahma enters in there, right? So light is transformed initially, or Brahma Jyoti is transformed first into Pradhana and Mahatattva, which is like causal. You know, the original cause is Brahma, right? In the Prakriti, in the region of, let's consider, there is darkness, right? Now in darkness everything is dark, everything is unmanifest. But in the darkness some light enters. And now when the light, just as it is entering, that is Mahatattva and Pradhana. Mahatattva and Pradhana cannot be really differentiated. And it can be, and also it is causal, it is karana. And so it's this side and that side. Like in the spiritual side, it is Brahma. Right? And when the Brahma is gradually transforming into elements, then it is gradually transforming into Mahatattva, Pradhana, etc., etc., Chitta.
Pradhan, that means there is all the elements, but they are not divided already. Mahatattva means that the elements already started manifesting. No?
Then how is it, how do you define Mahatattva? Like, as you say, Pradhan is when it is not defined, but Mahatattva is when it is defined. Now how do you define Mahatattva?
No, I saw that Mahatattva means that these material elements are
differentiated.
You know, that Pradhan is a mess. You know, homogeneous. And in Mahatattva they are already.
Yeah, okay. Right. You can consider that. Because as I said, the first thing is Pradhan. And then it is Mahatattva. Then it is transforming. Now if you look at it from this side, then you are looking at Mahatattva. Right? From material direction if you go, you come to Mahatattva. Right? And when you come from that direction, then it appears to be like Pradhana. But you are looking at Mahatattva. Right? From material direction if you go, you come to Mahatattva. Right? And when you come from that direction, then it appears to be like Pradhana. But it's difficult to define. Like, there is no specific definition that only in this aspect is Mahatattva and that aspect is Pradhana. Often it is said that Mahatattva and Pradhana are actually the same.
No.
If you compare to a coin, then it would be more like Brahma Jyoti and
Mahatattva.
I'm not sure that if Mahatattva
is
the
time
that you include
and Pradhan is
not
the time.
No. Time is always constant. Time is actually kala. Everything is situated on kala.
Yeah.
Anyways, actually Mahatattva and Pradhana are not different. Sometimes it's called as Pradhana, sometimes it's called as Mahatattva. Because both Mahatattva and Pradhana, both are actually unmanifest. Right? Both are in the unmanifest stage. The manifestation begins from this eight Ashtadha, right? Eight different energies. Yes. Yeah, Brahma Jyoti is spiritual.
Yes,
there is time.
Yes.
Actually, there is no time here. You know that? Because the real time
in the spiritual sky, where it is nitya vartaman, eternally present time, right? Whereas here it is trikala, like time has been divided into past, present and future, right? And actually the past, actually in this material nature, time is manifest in the form of past and future. Present here is non-existent, practically. What is present? You cannot really grasp what is present. What, when you are thinking that this is present, it's become past, right? So this way, we are actually situated on a platform of, you know, future and past. And present is just an impression, right? We do not really know what it is. That's why it's the way the real thing is not existing in reflection. So the time, as it is reflected on this nature, it does not really, we cannot really grasp it as such.
Yes,
like, can you, if from a shadow, say, you are seeing a reflection of a tree in the water, and in the reflection there is an apple in the tree. Now, can you pick that apple? You can't. The same way, you cannot conceive of time in the material nature. But the real time is existing in the spiritual nature. It is eternally present. Over there, past and future is a reflection. Very, very far out. Far beyond this material nature. Yeah.
Coming back to the creation, I always understood that Krishna applies his material energy according to the desire of these souls who want to come to this material world, and Brahma then he forms the bodies according to their desires.
Mm. Yeah.
But still, it means that there is first the desire of the living entities to come here, but they are not already there. First there is the material energy, and then they are coming in this material energy, this living entities, and it's already there in whatever unmanifested form.
Or yeah. The desire is there. The desire is to enjoy without Krishna. So that desire is there, and those who want to enjoy without Krishna, they are put into this material nature.
So that would mean that the material nature is there, and then all these living entities come in this material nature.
Right. We have Prakriti is here, and then Krishna puts the living entities in the womb of Prakriti. Aham Bija Prada Pita. Krishna is telling that I am the seed giving father in the womb of Mother Prakriti. Right?
How are they coming there exactly?
How they're coming? How did you come? They're, as I said, that according to the desire they experience, they are given a chance to wake up, right? And as they wake up in different bodies, right? And then they begin to procure this sthani kaushali. They begin to...
And the Krishna is glancing over this material nature and is educating gets them.
Well, I mean, that is the general definition, but actually the further it has been described as Krishna does not, or Vishnu does not directly come in contact with Prakriti. It is Sambhu who comes in contact with Prakriti. Krishna, Vishnu transforms into Shiva. And then living entities are put into, then Shiva, you know, stores the living entity. And then he puts the living entities in the womb of Prakriti. That's why Prakriti is Durga and Shiva is the husband of Prakriti. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So Shiva actually sends the living entities into Prakriti. Right? I mean, but still we have to understand it's inconceivable. It is not like a dealing between a man and a woman as such. It's actually in a much more greater dimension and much more subtle.
Is the false ego is the false ego the false desire, or is it more separate?
False ego means false identity. Ego means identity, right? And false means what? Wrong, right? Actually, we are. What is our identity? What is our original identity? Jivar Sarup hai, Krishna Nitya Das. We are all a Krishna's eternal servant. But when you forget Krishna, when you forget that we are servants of Krishna, and we begin to think that we are the master of Maya, that is false ego. Right? Our identity becomes mistaken. Right? Instead of becoming a servant, we think that we are the master. So that is the false ego.
So actually it's not really a part of the other, like the intelligence, no, the other, it's more closer.
It's subtle element, subtle material element. But it's so subtle that you cannot understand what it is. Because with our grosser perception, we cannot perceive something that is finer. Like eyes are finer than touch, right? Your seeing perception is finer than your touch. Right? So that's why with your touch you cannot see. But with your eyes you can touch actually. You know that? Like when you see something, in your mind you can touch it. But by touching something you cannot see. So the understanding is that with the grosser senses you can perceive more gross substance, but you cannot perceive finer substance. Now, with our mind, we can even see, right? We can touch, because mind is higher. So mind actually includes all these elements, right? Or sense perception. But intelligence is finer than mind, so you cannot see intelligence with your mind. And false ego is even higher than intelligence. So you cannot see the false ego with your mind, or you cannot understand false ego with your intelligence. With your intelligence you can perceive your mind, because mind is lower than intelligence. But false ego, but with your false ego you can perceive your intelligence. Right?
Does it mean that actually we can perceive the lower, like the lower senses?
Yeah.
Could be perceived by the lower sense objects could be perceived by the higher senses.
Yeah.
Like ear is the highest of the gross sense organs.
Right.
So is it possible to actually touch with ear?
Yes, you can, like somebody tells you that there is something, and then immediately you get the impression, right?
But if I'm born blind, let's say I'm born blind and somebody explains to me it's a nice landscape with green trees, so how can I perceive green? I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, but still, it is in the mind, the impressions are there. Of course, I mean, as I said, the material nature is like permutation and combination. Material experiences are, you know, you gather some experience and that remains in your mind, and then accordingly you project it. Right? So, the things that you haven't experienced, you cannot possibly. You cannot possibly understand it.
Right.
So the same way, if you are blind, then yes, you cannot that region of your experience is not understood. And but the point that I was going to make is that with out of these five senses, one has the ability to grasp the other. Mm-hmm. Like for instance, ear perceives sound. Then from our skin, we perceive touch. Now touch includes sound, because ether and ear gives rise to sound. And the next to ether is air, right? And skin produces touch. Now touch includes sound, right? Then air, fire with our eyes produces form. Now form includes touch and sound, right? Then taste includes form, touch and sound. And smell includes taste, form, touch, and sound.
Mm.
And so it says that the grosser one, the next one, includes the preceding one.
And with the senses it works the other way around? To perceive like this.
Anyway, let's realize one thing. We simply have to get out of here. Let's not get tied down to this nature, but let's try to get out of this nature. Isn't it?
Yes.
So any other questions?
Yes.
How
is it
that
if
we develop the
desire to enjoy the existence of Krishna, we develop the intellect of Krishna? You see, living entity has consciousness, right? But since the living entity is very minute, his consciousness is also very minute, right? Now, that consciousness is like a ray of light. Now, a ray of light can be projected only on one direction, right? So, you can project your consciousness either to Krishna or away from Krishna, right? Now, when you project your consciousness to Krishna, then you are with Krishna. You are Krishna conscious. But when you project your consciousness away from Krishna, then when you are projecting your consciousness, you are projecting your consciousness onto Krishna's external energy, right? Because everything is Krishna. So either you are Krishna to Krishna or away from Krishna. Either Krishna's internal energy or Krishna's external energy, right? Now, what is Krishna's external energy? Krishna's external energy is this inferior material nature, right? Is it clear? You understand? Yeah. Krishna's external material nature. Now, this material nature is inferior in quality, right? And living entities are coming from Krishna's superior energy. So when a superior comes in contact with the inferior, he automatically develops a desire to lord it over, to dominate, because it's the natural tendency of the superior to dominate the inferior, right? So the living entity, as soon as he comes in contact with the material nature, he develops a desire to dominate over the material nature, right? So this desire to dominate over the material nature gives him the first covering of false ego. Because by nature, by his actual identity, he is the servant. But here he tries to become the master. And here he tries to dominate. Right? So then he gets the first covering of false ego.
Then he begins to plan how he is going to enjoy this material nature. That gives him the second covering of intelligence. Then his consciousness runs towards the material nature through his mind. So this way, through mind, intelligence and false ego, he develops a subtle body. And then the nature gives him a gross body made of five different elements of material nature. So material nature very nicely binds him with the gross body. First with the subtle body and then with the gross body. As long as we are projecting our consciousness towards the material nature, we are bound to become tied down to the material nature. Right? But the way out of this material nature is simply to project our consciousness onto Krishna. Manmana bhava madbhakta madhyaji manmanushu. That's the only way that we can get out of this material nature. But if we think that by being conscious of the material nature we are going to become free of this material bondage, or by we are going to go back to Godhead, that will not happen. As long as we are projecting our consciousness on the material nature, we are bound to become influenced by the desire to enjoy. Isn't it? Because when you think that, well, this is the material nature, this building should be mine, right? Or this car should be mine. This beautiful things in the shop should be mine. So that's why everybody in the material nature is desiring always. Now I should get that. These are actually meant for my enjoyment. Right? Because we are projecting our consciousness onto the inferior energy. But how do we transform that? We project our consciousness onto Krishna. Right? And then we see that everything actually belongs to Krishna. Right? So whatever we are seeing is actually Krishna's. How do we see that? Oh, there is a nice apartment. Right? But this apartment actually belongs to Krishna. But some thieves have entered into that apartment and they are claiming that it is their apartment. Right? So then you see like that. Or this is a nice car. That car is actually Krishna's car. Right? But some thief has stolen Krishna's property and claiming that this is his property. Then ultimately you put it, this world is actually Krishna's. But some thieves have stolen Krishna's property and they are claiming that it is their property. So what you do then? You try to kick the thieves out of this place and offer the things to Krishna. So that is the Sankirtan. Sankirtan actually means, in broader sense, Sankirtan means glorifying Krishna with everything. Use everything in order to glorify Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. So everything should be used in glorifying Krishna. And that's how you become Krishna conscious. We do not say we don't see anything, we don't hear anything, we don't eat anything. No, we don't say that. We say that everything belongs to Krishna and we must see everything in the light of Krishna consciousness. We must hear everything in the light of Krishna consciousness. And we must eat everything in the light of Krishna consciousness. Clear? Hare Krishna.
The staunch materialist ones also ask me regarding that explanation of the widened Krishna range and that living entity which is rejecting Krishna cannot, without entanglement, enjoy this inferior nature. Why does the living entity have to become entangled? Why can't Krishna?
Yeah, because it's a punishment. Krishna didn't send us here to enjoy, first of all. Did Krishna send us here to enjoy? Obviously not. Krishna sends us here to suffer. Right? And the condition is, the more we try to enjoy, the more we end up suffering. Right? So Krishna has made the arrangement. Krishna wants us to enjoy. Right? But in order to enjoy, we have to be with Krishna. We cannot say, I'll reject Krishna and at the same time I'll enjoy. Right? You cannot say, I won't go to the school, but I'll come up with the best result. Does it work? You cannot say, I won't study, but I'll come first in the class. Will it work? Or you cannot say that I will neglect the king, but I will enjoy his kingdom. Will it work? It doesn't. So the same way, in order to enjoy, we have to be with Krishna. Now if we say that I don't want to be with Krishna, then what is the condition? We have to suffer. And that's exactly what happens. We reject Krishna, we fall into the material nature, we suffer. And the suffering is there so that we can understand the value of being with Krishna.
Well, this person went further saying that Krishna is already self-satisfied, so why don't he leave me?
Yeah, Krishna is self-satisfied, but we are not. So Krishna can enjoy without us, but we cannot enjoy without Krishna.
But he said that Krishna fulfills all desires.
Krishna fulfilled your desire. You wanted to enjoy without Krishna. So Krishna is fulfilling that desire. That's why Krishna created this material nature and he sent you here. And the more you're trying to enjoy, you think that you can enjoy. And you really feel that you are enjoying without Krishna. But actually you're suffering. That's how we have to answer them. And Krishna fulfills everybody's desire. Actually, we desire this, and that's why Krishna sent us here.
Seemingly he didn't satisfy or act on that desire that we want someone to enjoy this material nature without entanglement. I mean, that's a price we have to get entangled. You want to enjoy.
Right.
But on the other hand, then he asks, well, if my desire is to enjoy this nature without being entangled,
yes,
and he doesn't satisfy that desire.
Yes. The thing is that Krishna fulfills everybody's desire, but at the same time, there is something called the law of nature. Right? So there's a law of spiritual nature and there's a law of material nature. Right? You cannot disregard the law. Right? And the law of spiritual nature is that remain with Krishna and you'll enjoy. Right? And law of material nature is the more you try to enjoy without Krishna, the more you'll suffer. So that's what is happening. The more more one is trying to enjoy without Krishna, the more one is suffering in this material nature. You see, consider the condition of this world today. The more they're making advancement means more they're trying to exploit this nature for their enjoyment, the more miserable they're becoming. The more advanced the country, the more is the rate of suicide. Right? The more advanced, more divorce. More advanced, more abortion. Right? More advanced, more crime. So, what does this mean? Does one commit suicide when he's enjoying? No. If the husband and wife are living peacefully, happily, do they get divorced? No. So that shows that they're suffering. The more they're advancing, meaning more they're trying to enjoy without Krishna, the more miserable they're becoming. Maybe their life is glamorous, maybe their roads are very clean, the apartments are nicely decorated, they are wearing expensive clothes.